You're listening to Her Side Hustle, the podcast that teaches women how to build their business while working a 9-to-5. Each week, we'll hear the stories of female entrepreneurs on how they turn their side hustle dreams into a reality. I'm your host, Rachel Burke, and this is Her Side Hustle. Hi, Emily.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you doing today?
Good, good.
I'm really excited for today's interview for probably like two main reasons. The first one is that I absolutely love your mission. You're committed to making girls feel comfortable in their own skin. You're passionate about promoting positive body image, media awareness, and healthy relationships. And I absolutely just love what you stand for and the impact that you're making on girls' lives. So very, very excited to hear more about that. And then on the other hand, you're also like the perfect definition of a side hustler. I mean, on your website, like you're a body image expert, you're an author, you're a photographer, you're even a marketing manager for your family's pizza business.
Yep.
So you pretty much do everything, you know?
I'm all over the place.
Yeah, but I love it. I love it. I mean, that's, you know, that's just tons of different side hustles that pretty much make up who you are. So I'm definitely very excited to hear all about each one of those today. But before we actually get into all of that, I did want to just take a little bit of a step back and just kind of get a better understanding of, you know, who Emily is. Like, where are you from? You know, tell me about your upbringing and your family and your childhood and just give me some background.
Absolutely. So I was born in Mississauga, Ontario, Canada. Usually, like if I say like Mississauga, people don't understand where that is. So yeah, I'm a Canadian girl. I was raised in a really good family, very supportive, very entrepreneurial. My parents, my dad actually, he was in university for political science, ended up taking over a trade show business, and ultimately is now a restaurateur. So my full-time gig is doing the marketing and operations for them. So we're a very close-knit family, and we really believe in entrepreneurialism and sort of making a difference while we're at it.
Cool. Okay. And so where did you go to college and what were you doing prior to starting all of your side hustles? Did you work any other jobs or did you kind of just dive on in?
Yeah. So I went to Wilfrid Laurier University in Waterloo, Ontario, and I studied women's studies and sociology. And right out of university, I hopped into a career in the counseling field. So I was a workplace support program coordinator for a mental health services company. They did like mandated counseling cases. And then my parents' business was in need of some help. And after about just under 2 years of doing the mental health services position, I switched over into an operations and marketing role for my parents' company. And I've been doing that for 9 years now.
Okay.
And like, it really gave me some flexibility to sort of also pursue some of my side passions because I had a more flexible schedule, you know, working for my family, but it has its pros and cons.
Yeah. I was going to ask, how is it working for your family? Do you ever get into like arguments or just get sick of each other or, you know, are there any challenges or is it pretty awesome because you do have that flexibility and freedom to, you know, also pursue other areas and hustles that you're interested in?
I would say it's mostly good. It's mostly positive. There are some negatives in that we talk about business constantly, but that was sort of even before I started working for them. Like, we've always been very entrepreneurial, so we always talk business. Mm-hmm. Mostly it's good things. You know, sometimes it's hard because there's so much trust put in my role, and my parents sort of like let me guide what I need to do. So sometimes it'd be nice to have a little bit of, you know, more structure, but at the same time, I think if I was given more structure, I would probably push back. So
yeah.
It's probably a good thing.
But that's cool. I mean, I feel like the fact that you're able to work with your family, like it's pretty awesome that you guys are close-knit, and I'm sure you get to see them a lot, or at least you're constantly talking with them. So I love that.
Exactly.
When did you kind of become passionate about spreading positive body image? Like, when did this all kind of develop with you?
So my love for this really sparked when I was in university. And, the book I wrote actually, like I had learned these things that were what I call like inaccessible before. So I had no idea about why there were such thing as body image issues. I just knew they exist. They were a part of my life and other people's lives. And, it's just something we took as that's normal. But when I learned in university that these things actually aren't normal and there's all these reasons why we develop body image issues, I really wanted to spread that message, that information, because I think it could really help a lot of young girls and women. And, it can help us start challenging sort of the way things are normalized in society. So really, my interest was struck in university. But I didn't write the book or start working on the book project until quite a few years later. And I was kind of, over the years, I was like, how can I do this, And taking on this idea of writing a book is a little daunting, especially because, I don't have a PhD or anything like that. But, once I sort of got over those hurdles, I realized that this is the right opportunity for me to do because I wanted to write it from a perspective of someone who, isn't super high educated. I wanted to make this information really accessible to everyone. Then, yeah, I started working on the project, and I guess the hardest part of it was getting participants to photograph because I also photographed 75 women for the book.
Okay, got it. So,
Yeah.
taking kind of a step back, you really, your interest kind of peaked in university. Why did you even choose the major that you chose? Like, was there something in your life prior to university that led you or like called you to that, I don't know, like that major, or you
Yeah,
just.
absolutely. I had one of those defining moments, I guess you could say. I was helping a friend who was going through some tough mental health issues. And I learned that she was actually cutting herself. And so I got her to book an appointment with the school social worker, and I came with her. And I remember that social worker throughout the process saying to me, like, you would make a really good social worker. And the idea of helping people and getting into the social services field sort of had sparked my interest. So I applied for sociology, kind of not knowing what I was getting myself into. And then I took a course in women's studies, and I decided to change my major to a double major because both those topics really piqued my interest. And here we are.
It's crazy. I had when I was younger, I don't even know like what age I was in, maybe like middle school or so, but I remember I had girls like in my class that, they cut themselves or they, would make themselves throw up after they ate. And it was almost like, I don't even know like the right word, but not like the popular thing to do, but it was kind of like people were talking about it and being like, "Oh, she cuts herself." And like making it
Yeah.
seem like it was a good
Trendy
thing.
or yeah, exactly. Yeah. And you know what? Like those practices are really attention-seeking behaviors and not so much in a bad way. Like we go, "Oh, they just want attention," but it's true. It's a cry for help, right? Those things. A lot of the time, and whether they're doing it, to be trendy or whatever. Either way, it's a cry for needing, some attention.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Okay, so you helped your friend, which is awesome. That's really, I mean, that just shows that you're a great friend. You were supporting her, you went with her. That's great. So you had the idea of kind of like social work or something to related to that field. Did you know that like a body image expert was even an option or a career path? Like, how did you even find out what that was?
I mean, it's sort of one of those things. Like, I think anyone can be an expert in something if they fully immerse themselves in that culture. We get so hung up on, if you have a, master's degree or a PhD or this or that. Like, anyone who really excels at something and knows a lot about a certain topic, I think, can be an expert. And I guess it it wasn't until my book was sort of in the final processes that I was like, yeah, I am an expert in this stuff, right? Like I don't need to have, an intense, background backing up what I'm doing because I know a lot about this stuff, right? And I think that especially women, a lot of the time, like we want to play down our achievements and, it's scary to be like, yeah, I am good at this. So, I didn't know it was sort of a, I guess, a side hustle career option, but it really has ended up being that because, that's where a lot of my time and effort is spent.
Gotcha. Okay, and now before you wrote your book, like when you first decided like I'm gonna go this route or pursue this passion of the body image expert, did you do any like one-on-one coaching with any other women just on, how to create a positive body image, or did you kind of just go straight into writing the book?
I read every single book I could find on everything. I read every scholarly journal out there, relating to body image issues. And I also read every book that was out there already, sort of, that touched upon some of these things. And still, I still felt like that there was an opportunity to sort of put it all in a nice little bow, this information and kind of focus it in while at the same time creating, a positive piece of media that that people could read and see visually to make themselves feel good.
Okay, got it, got it. Now I also, and we'll get to your book in just a second, but I do want to touch on quickly your website. You have a website titled happydaughter.com. Tell me about it. How did you come up with a name for your website?
So it's kind of a little bit of a story. So originally when I got the publishing deal, the book was called Average Girl, A Guide to Loving Your Body, but we had decided to change it to Real Happy, A Guide to Loving Your Body. And then we decided to change it one more time to Body Positive, A Guide to Loving Your Body. But I was switching over my branding from the average sort of project. And when I was looking through domains and ideas, I really wanted something that was sort of generic, but also encapsulated all the different avenues of body image that I was working on. So Happy Daughter came up, and I thought it was perfect because, I really want to create this world full of happy daughters. And I thought, what better way to sort of tie everything in?
Okay, cool. So let's switch to the book. So you wrote the book. It's called Body Positive, A Guide to Loving Your Body. And it just came out actually on January 5th, which is so recently, but it's so exciting. So congratulations.
Thank you.
So tell us about it. What exactly, can we expect when we purchase your book?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's kind of a little bit of everything, and I like to think of it as like an intro to body image. But it also has a really visual aspect to it. So there's 75 women that I photographed for the book in their underwear. The point was, to really show diversity in body types and, not show edited bodies and, images that are manipulated, because that's what we see a lot of on social media and in mainstream media.
Yep.
And then I sort of broke down a bunch of issues that sort of tie into our body image. And there's introspective questions, and then there's actually like interview excerpts from some of the interviews I had, because I also interviewed about roughly, 75 to 100 women on their experiences with body image issues. And the really cool thing about those excerpts is that they are very raw, they're very real. So we some of them can might be triggering, but we wanted to be really real. I wanted to really showcase that these are real responses, and that, we other people who read the book, they aren't alone in their thoughts, right? Because all of our experiences are actually more similar than we think.
Yeah, I saw some of the images that you have in your book, like just from your website, and it's beautiful. It's so cool that you were able to do that. Was it difficult finding women that were comfortable with, you know, standing there in their underwear and putting themselves out there for everybody to see.
Absolutely. That was the reason it took as long as it did. You know, that and having two kids in between, but the actual writing of the book was done fairly quickly, like within a year or so. But I never felt like it was quite complete because I really wanted to showcase as much diversity as I could in the images. And, you know, being in your underwear in a book is something that's really, really intimidating. So, and I didn't want just people that were comfortable in front of a camera. I wanted really raw, really real, you know, women who were, you know, challenging sort of their comfort zone. And I mean, it was a pretty amazing process though, like, you know, seeing people and how empowered they felt afterwards. You know, the stories I got to hear, like it just was a great experience.
That's really cool. And yeah, I totally agree. I mean, if you had just like a bunch of really confident women that you photographed, it would almost be fake, you know, like I like mm-hmm. that you, it was raw, it was real. And it was challenging for those women because it is. It's, I mean, it's a challenging topic and a subject. So that's really cool that you were able to find these women and kind of actually, how did you find them? Are they all strangers? Are they some people you know?
Some of them are strangers. Some of them are good friends of mine. I put ads out anywhere I could online. I was lucky enough to connect with a great organization in Toronto called Drama Way. So we were able to feature some beautiful girls who have Down syndrome and different abilities. And, you know, it was interesting to find different people. I would get connections through some of the people that agreed to participate. They're like, oh, I should tell my friend about this. You know, I had one woman actually fly out from Texas, all the way to me just to, you know, it was a few minute photo shoot. But she really saw the value in what I was doing. And I'm just so honored that all of these women were able to participate.
Yeah, that's awesome. Good for them. And so were you the one taking, I know that you're a part-time photographer. Were you the one taking the photos or did you guys hire a different,
it
you know, photographer?
Me.
Wow.
Yeah, it was all me.
How did you... Have you always had an interest in photography or is it just a new skill or?
So, well, when I was in grade school, I wanted to be a photographer. I wanted to be the next Ann Geddes, but it was never something I pursued. But when I came up with the concept of this book, I started talking to photographers, but no one really, first of all, it would have been super expensive if I had gone that route, but also no one could really, I think, visually give me what I had in my mind, what I was dreaming up. So I went out and I learned how to be a photographer. And it was kind of great because it became a little side hustle. I had a studio for a couple of years. And it was a whole new skill set. But I really, you know, wanted to do it myself because I thought, you know, no better person than the one who dreamed it all up.
Yeah, that's awesome. So how did you develop the skills? Did you have to take any sort of like photography courses or did you just do a bunch of like research?
Yes, I was totally self-taught. So I did a lot of like online classes and articles and a lot of it was just trial and error. You know, it's funny now, like I've had students, I've had a couple interns even over the years and people looking for advice. And, you know, for me, photography is like experimentation and sort of feeling and, you know, a little bit of it is, you know, the science and mathematics of how things work with everything. But for me, I go based on more feel and what I think looks good and trial and error. So
yeah, that's cool. I love that you took the photos yourself. I mean, like you said, like you know your vision more than anybody. So yeah. It's cool that you were able to actually take the photos.
Yeah.
And so you mentioned you actually had like a studio and a little bit of a side hustle. Mm-hmm. Were you taking different, like, did you have a different niche at that time that you were taking photos of, like weddings or family photos or?
When I was learning, I did everything. You know, my passion was actually for women's portraiture and boudoir photography because it was about empowering and making women feel good in their skin. But it's still a hard sort of niche to sort of really focus on. I still do it part-time on the side, but I don't have the full studio because I just don't have the capacity to do both. My full-time gig, the book stuff, and that, you know, full-time. But I really wanted to fully immerse myself in it because I never do anything, you know, halfway. So I did weddings, I did babies, I did it all.
Cool. But
my favorite was obviously working with women.
That's awesome. I've never taken like boudoir photos before. And I actually got married, when was it? I guess a year and a half ago. And you know how so many people, they'll take like all those photos and give it to their husband and like an album for their wedding day. Yeah. I thought about it for like 1 second. And then I was like, I don't have the confidence, or I wouldn't feel comfortable like wearing that. Like I have to work out and eat healthy and all this stuff. Yes. But you don't need to, you know,
and that's really the point of everything. And I think the difference that sets like sort of what I do apart from other photographers, because there are a lot of boudoir photographers out there that are either males or they're women who only feature women with a certain aesthetic, you know? And my whole thing is like, I don't care if you have body hair. I don't care if you are fat or have stretch marks or whatever. I'm going to put you in positions that are flattering to you and that make you feel good and empowered. And, you know, I think really photographing people with a female gaze, which is a non-objectifying, you know, lens. I find that really, really empowering when people see their pictures.
Yeah, I feel like maybe in the past, like people would look at those photos kind of like, oh, it's just like such a sexual thing. But mm-hmm. I think that it's so empowering for women to take those photos of themselves, just for themselves. Like it just makes them feel good, and it shows them like how strong and beautiful they are. So I love that you did that, and still do that actually.
Yeah, exactly.
So one other question I do have about your photography, you know, because you are all about like positive body image and whatnot, how does that impact like how you edit photos at all? Because I know photographers, they might have to edit, you know, just certain aspects to make the, you know, whoever it is like look better. Mm-hmm. Does that really impact your photography?
Yeah. So my policy is that I don't manipulate bodies in any shape or form. So I don't believe in thinning you or, you know, making you look wider in certain areas. Like I want you to be you. And I think that's really important. I also like, I leave it up to the client sort of to tell me, you know, what they want photoshopped out or left alone. Some people are really comfortable with their stretch marks. Other people aren't, and they'd like those edited out. I think they're beautiful. But I do edit those things out upon request. That being said, with like professional lighting and, you know, editing, like skin retouching, like it's very minimal because of the way things are shot. Like I'm very like light, bright and airy editing style. So you really don't see a lot of the things that people might call imperfections. Yeah. But I always believe in editing out zits and whatnot, things that aren't normally there.
Yep, got it. Okay, cool. That's awesome. Alrighty, so let's transition back to the book. Mm-hmm. So you've mentioned that it took you some time to write it. How long exactly did it take to write your body positive book?
I think it took me about a year. And then I had it edited, and then I did a little bit more work on it. And then through the editing process, once I got a publishing deal, there was a little bit more work that we did on it, kind of to update it, because I'd been working on it for so many years that some of the information, like I wanted more updated statistics and things like that. And I reframed, you know, a couple of chapters a little bit, just from, you know, all the experience I'd garnered over the last few years. But yeah.
Yeah, I could imagine like if I were to write a book, let's say 5 years ago, mm-hmm. and it took me, or if I were to start a book 5 years ago and it took me, you know, 5 years to complete, looking at myself 5 years ago, like what I would, my messaging or like my thoughts or anything would just be so different because I was in such a different point in my life, That I
It's
could imagine that
true.
would be challenging.
Yeah, and I mean, sometimes I think back and I'm like, I wrote this book actually while I had started it before I had kids, but then I also had kids throughout it and stuff. But the target audience the whole time has been girls and young women and stuff. So anytime I feel critical, like I think my work, needed to be a little bit more updated, I had to remind myself, that who I was writing for, and it was meant to be easy to read. It was meant to be easy to understand, and I didn't want to get too far into like really in-depth, theories and things like that. It grazes the surface, but for a very important reason. And that's because it's for someone who really has not been exposed to any of this information before.
Got it. So, like, easily digestible by
Yeah.
girls or older women, like, really
Yes.
anybody. Okay.
Yeah.
Got it. Now, is it hard writing a book? I mean, I'm sure it's challenging. Like, was it harder than you had expected? Was it easier?
I think because I had, wrote it only a couple years after university. I was really used to writing papers and doing research and whatnot. So it in terms of that, it didn't feel super hard. What the hardest part is sort of organizing your thoughts and coming out with, what you want to do and sort of how to structure it. And it, working with an editor does help in that process because they're really good at helping you sort of like, maybe you should put this sentence here and whatnot. But the actual process of writing for me, like it wasn't difficult. It's more about the organizing and making sure that everything is properly like cited and that you're not, misrepresenting someone's words and whatnot.
Got it. What was like a typical day like for you when you were writing the book? Did you wake up every day and just start writing and write all day? Did you have specific days that you wrote or hours that you wrote?
Yeah, usually I mean, because I was working full time, I didn't have time to work on it much during the week and stuff. So a lot of it was weekends, and there were some days I would spend hours on it, and then there was other days I'd spend an hour of free time here and there, really, getting into the nitty-gritty or just adding in a couple quotes or whatnot. But it sort of varied, and I think with writing. Anything really. You have to write when you're feeling inspired. You need to feel rested and, not pressured into writing sort of thing, because then it doesn't flow the way that it should.
Yeah. I can imagine. Oh God, I don't know how I would write a book. It would be tough. I feel like I would sit there
Starting's
and just struggle, but that's cool. That's really cool.
the hardest part.
I can imagine. Yeah, I can imagine for sure. So did you ever have moments of weakness where you just were like, I can't do this. Like, what am I doing? Or you just like,
Yes.
your brain was not working.
Absolutely. Really, like there were times where I was like, why am I doing this? And it wasn't so much that like the writing was hard or whatever. I was like, no one's going to take me seriously. People, even when I put it out there, there's people like, you're going to write a book, but like,
Yep.
why? So I think getting past the self-doubt was the hardest part. And realizing, like I said earlier, like you can be an expert without being an expert in a way, right? Like if you commit your life's work to doing something and to studying something and to, wanting to spread a certain message and have a certain purpose, then that's what you need to focus on. And there were a couple of times that I wanted to give up, because I didn't feel like I had enough representation in the book with the women participating, getting their photographs taken, and being a mom, I took a little bit of time because the passion wasn't there when I was navigating becoming a mom and whatnot. But I have a had a great support system, and I actually met one of my participants, and she's now like one of my best friends.
Cool.
And she really helped me, stay motivated and on track. And she was one of my biggest cheerleaders. And I'm so grateful that she helped me sort of get past the finish line.
Yeah, I think that having like a a great support system is so necessary because it's so easy to get wrapped up in your head and to have doubts. And, you just need somebody sometimes to kick you and just to tell you to keep going and have faith in you. And it's just encouraging, it makes you, it makes you want to do more when it's, when there's somebody else cheering you on.
Hearing feedback, that you're doing something good also is a big motivator. Like when I started to share like either just a simple quote on social media and stuff, and like knowing that I was affecting even like one person made it all worthwhile too.
Yeah, I mean, because your messaging, like your book is around, it's helping people, you know? It's not a book about, I don't know, birds. Like it, you're helping, you're changing people's lives and their mindset. So it's just rewarding, I'm sure. So did you have to do any like sort of marketing or any like how did you make people aware that your book was coming out?
So I really started building my platform, well, years ago. That was one of the things when I was starting to query my book to literary agents and publishers, was that I didn't have a big platform. So basically, you don't even have to write a good book. You just have to have a platform to sell it on. So I spent a lot of time learning how to build a platform. I started writing, articles here and there for different publications. I got to write stuff for Girls Life. And then I years ago I was going to self-publish the book at one point, and I got some great media attention for what I was doing from like the Huffington Post, Yahoo, Style, The Sun, Mirror. A bunch of publications had picked up sort of my story, so that helped, build a bit more credibility, build some following, and the last few years, really, what I've worked on is building my social media up so that, I had a bit of a platform. But the great thing about my publisher, Familiist, is that they really, not that they don't care about having a platform, that's an important part of marketing a book, but their sort of message is that they want the book to be right for their audience first before having the built-in audience, right? And I think that's really like inspiring that they understand there are people out there that have really great things to say with their books, and just, they're there to help you get that message out. And I'm very thankful for having such a great publisher.
Was it difficult finding a publisher or an editor? Like, I honestly have no idea how that process even works. Do you have to hire them? Do they have to hire you?
Yeah, so
How?
yeah, I mean, I've learned all kinds of different things. So, through the first round when I was going to self-publish, I did hire an editor, a copy editor, because I was really worried about, saying or citing the wrong things, and I didn't want to get sued and whatnot. And she also helped me sort of organize the book so that it was nice and easy to digest. But then, with a publisher, like it's tricky to get a publisher. I spent many years trying to get this out there. All the while I just kept growing the amount of women I was photographing, but I kept doing it. And then I found Familiist, and I pitched them. So they offered me a contract, and then they provide an editor to me, and then all these services that are also involved. They've got a PR department, they've got their graphic design, their sales departments, everything. So it's really becomes a more collaborative thing once you get a publishing deal, and they really do help you. So there's a different editor for each stage of sort of the book process. So
It sounds like having a publisher, oh my God, publisher is pretty key when you want to write a book. Okay, cool.
absolutely.
So when you first started writing your book to, today after it's been published and launched, how do you think, like, how do you think that our culture has shifted? Is it better than when we first start or when you first started? Is it worse? Because I feel like on one hand, like, cyberbullying and like there's just so many issues still very present in today's world, especially I feel like with like teenage girls. But on the other hand, when I open up like my Instagram, I have definitely seen over the past like 5 or so years a huge shift. Like when I was in college, I mean, it was all about crazy diets and trying to be as skinny as possible and nonstop cardio. Whereas today, if I look at my Instagram, I'm seeing all about like the messaging of eat whatever you want, eat when you want, like stretch marks are sexy and embrace yourself. Do you see that too, or do you think we're still in a
I think on one hand it's gotten worse, and on the other, help has gotten more accessible, if that
Okay.
makes sense. Like studies show that girls as young as age 3 are having body image issues. So it's getting worse.
Wow.
it
Age 3?
yep. Yeah.
Dang.
It's really true, especially with social media. Social media is yikes, like it's one of those media sources that are so in your face and it's really uncontrollable, like before when I grew up, it was, magazines and, some ads and the messages you saw in movies and whatnot. Now it's everywhere. And the editing abilities of regular, easy to use software is insane. These filters, the reach that diet culture has today, it's insane. So, and then cyberbullying, it's really tough. And I do worry about, when my daughter gets older and how we're going to navigate these issues, because it's tricky. But I think parents, on the other hand, can be better equipped, especially with a book like mine, sort of giving you a breakdown, an easy way to start these conversations with your young girls, is really important. But I think we need to teach the people that are being exposed to all these negative messages how to sort of combat what they're seeing. So that's why I wrote this book. I want people to understand that, you can filter your feed. You can ch actively choose who you follow, so that, like you said, you see on your social media people that love their stretch marks and things like that. That's because you're an active participant in what you see on your curated feed, right? And I think that's really, really important. But we need to teach our children, and teens sort of how to navigate these things, because they're so much more intense right now.
Yeah, and you raised a good point that I didn't even think about. Like all of the apps and like filters and that we have available today, I mean, you can completely like take out every single wrinkle in your face in a photo or make your teeth super white or you can literally stretch it and like stretch your body or stretch your so you're like larger in areas or shorter or skinnier in areas. It's crazy the things that you can do, and it's free.
And no wonder why we're disappointed in our real selves, is because we're not seeing real on the internet, not even in the camera, in the photo that we take of our own self.
Yeah, I mean, I am. There will be times where I'll open up my Instagram and I'll be like taking like a selfie video to my friends or something. And it's just going to my friends, but I'll be like, oh my God, like I look so ugly because I don't have a filter on, But that's me. Like that's exactly how I look. But I'm sitting there because I'm comparing myself to what I looked like with the sun-kissed glow filter that I had on yesterday,
And that's why
So.
we got to normalize normal, right?
Yep.
And that's the big part of what I'm trying to do. And I mean, I also don't want, women to feel guilty about participating in these things too. Like it's no one's fault that things are. And I love a good filter too, like I
Yep.
love playing with lighting and things like that. But when it changes who you are to the point that it affects how you feel about yourself is when it becomes a problem. And we just, we need the skills to be able to balance enjoying stuff like that, but also, not letting it really hurt us.
Absolutely. For instance, like plastic surgery, the older that I get, the more and more I'm seeing people my age, and I'm 28, so I don't know. I just never knew that so many people in their 20s got like plastic surgery, like Botox and lip injections and just all sorts of stuff. I never knew that that was such a common thing until I got to this age. And I'm not against, like, if somebody is really insecure about something and they want to plump their lips up or get a boob job or nose job or whatever it is, like, I'm not here to tell you you can't do that. If that's what will make you feel better about yourself, then by all means go for it. But I want people to do it, I guess, for like themselves, to make themselves feel better, but not for other people, you know, if
And
that at all makes sense.
it's hard to differentiate that too, though, right? Like, it's hard to realize what is socially constructed as, you know, standards or ideals in terms of how we feel about ourselves. But we also can't change how we've been affected by these things, you know, like I use the example of like the like shaving, for example, right? Like I understand the concept of like embracing our natural selves and stuff, but that's not going to change the fact that I shave my legs, you know, like because it makes me feel better and I'm not going to feel guilty about that, but I'm still going to fight to change the fact that women should have the choice on how to display their bodies and it shouldn't just be about being appealing as a sexual object or you know just be based on our appearance as our value.
Yep, totally. And I think that we as women too, we have to, like, we are the ones also responsible to make that change, because I don't know about you, but I think that women are so much harsher on each other than men are on us, in my opinion. And so it's us, like, we're the ones doing it to other people. We're giving it and we're taking it, and I think that we all need to change our own mindsets and just be more accepting or loving or building each other up rather than criticizing others. It starts with
Exactly.
each of
And
us.
yeah, absolutely. And I think part of that is recognizing where, like, so there's this theory, and I sort of explain it in the book in a really easy way to understand. So the male gaze is the way in which women start to self-objectify, right? They internalize social ideals and then they actually start to self-monitor. And we do that to each other as well. And we're all out here, you know, making comments about other women and our own bodies, whereas we should be going, that's wrong. Why do I think that way? You know? But unless someone stands up and says it, you know, we're going to keep doing what we've been taught to do, which is we learn from our moms and our friends that we, you know, need to talk about how crappy we look or, you know, that she shouldn't be wearing this or whatnot. So it's really understanding our behaviors and then finding ways to challenge those behaviors as well.
Yeah, totally. And I don't know. I love the messaging and all that you stand for with this book. It's just, I think that pretty much every girl could use it and could learn from it and grow from it. I mean, even like internally thinking about myself right now, like so I bought a new calendar for 2021, and in January, like on the side, I wrote a note like, work out 16 days this month and eat healthy and no alcohol during the week, which, yes, that's great, and I should be doing that because it's healthy and it's, you know, like, it's good to work out, it's good to eat healthy. But at the same time, the reason why I wrote that was to lose weight, you know, not for my mental health and my physical health. It was because of my appearance. That's wrong.
And I mean there's no blame because there's a whole multi-billion dollar industry out there that is teaching you to think that way. And I think it's really important to educate ourselves on intuitive eating and intuitive fitness, even because it's really listening to your body. And the goal is not, you know, even health or size. It's really about making yourself have a good relationship with those things, with fitness and with eating foods. And eventually it almost leads into health because you're naturally doing things that make your body feel good. But so often we think that we need to restrict and we need to do this and, you know, we're setting ourselves up for failure. You know, 98% of diets fail because they're meant to fail because companies that offer these diets and these fitness plans and whatnot, they profit off of it, right? So instead of listening to our bodies and what they actually need, sometimes they need rest, sometimes they need compassion, sometimes they need to go for a run, you know? But it's really, you know, it's these things that children, it's so natural from them. It is intuitive for them to do. And we have this whole culture that teaches us, into disordered eating and exercise habits so that they can make money, and then it messes with our minds and, you know.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I totally agree. And yeah, I can't wait. I'm just excited to read your book. It sounds like it's going to be really informative and helpful. And I'm also excited to see the rest of those photos. I think I saw like three of them, but they sound so cool. So I just love what you did with that book. But a couple other questions for you. Yeah. What are your goals for the next 5 years? Do you hope to write another book, or do you maybe want to, I don't know, grow your Instagram, you know, larger, or any other ventures?
Yeah. So I actually have completed a children's book, and I'm just sort of deciding what I'm doing with that right now. So more for, you know, how I was talking about the statistics with, you know, kids as young as age 3, and I've got 2 little kids who are very susceptible to things like that. So I'm working on something in that realm. And I'm also looking into the next steps. I'm wanting to set up a nonprofit or a charity to sort of create some resources to help educate young people on some of these issues. And I have another little photography project that will tie into that that I'm just starting to cook up.
Cool. I love all of that. That's awesome. Yeah. That's really exciting. What is one piece of advice that you would give to other women or girls who just, they dream of starting a side hustle, becoming an entrepreneur, but they're just scared to take that leap? Any advice for them?
I think dive in. You know, the hardest step is always, you know, taking that first step. And it's scary, and it's, you know, there are going to be people that are going to say, why are you doing this? You're not qualified enough. But I think not letting that translate into self-doubt and making you doubt what you want to do is a huge important part. But also, I think the next best thing is knowing that your ideas can always change and morph. You know, you might start off with one goal in mind, but it kind of snowballs into another direction. And it's always okay at any point in your life to change the direction, to change your purpose, to change your mind, to change your opinion, you know, like, and not feel guilty for any of that. We all are allowed to follow our dreams, and we're all allowed to grow and learn and become better people.
Yep, I totally agree. The first step is 100% the hardest. And once you get over that, you know, it definitely comes easier. So totally agree with you there. Okay, one last question. Where can our listeners purchase your book and connect with you to find out more information on your children's book coming and all the other exciting, you know, things that you have coming up next?
Absolutely. So you can follow me on Facebook or Instagram at Real Happy Daughter. You can visit my website at happydaughter.com, and the book is available basically anywhere online that you can buy a book. So it's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, all those fun places, Target, Walmart, wherever you can find a book.
Cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Emily. I truly appreciate, you know, chatting with you today. I loved hearing all about your story and your mission. I know that you're going to change many, you know, girls' lives. It's just great what you're doing. So I really appreciate it. And I of course wish you nothing but the best.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Hey everyone, thank you so much for joining today. I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as I did. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and leave a review so other lady hustlers can find the show. Until next time, keep going.